Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
And we are in our remote office here in Champaign-Urbana instead of our regular studio because there's a lot of snow on the ground, travel's a bit treacherous, and it's like 50 degrees below zero.
Yes, yes. So, but this is a game we had to talk about. There's no way we couldn't do an episode today because this was one for the record books.
Indeed, one for the ages for Illinois basketball as they beat Purdue over the weekend in Mackey. Yeah, you heard that right. They won in Mackey Arena, so we want to dive into that and the implications of the win going forward, plus some of the other items of the week, other items of the weekend, that is, for Illinois athletics. So we will get that going. But first, Robert, wait a minute. The eye is in
is
our
in
studio.
The frozen studio.
Yeah.
So
the closed studio. So what do we do?
We could still light the eye. We could still.
Oh, thankfully there's this screen behind us.
Come on. We could still light the eye.
We find a way. That's what we do. You just find a way. For starters, the new AP poll came out today, and Illinois is now ranked number 9 in the country. Their highest ranking this year was number 8, but they moved up a few slots after beating Purdue. And KenPom, the probably most widely used metric, predictive metric, has Illinois as the number 5 team in the country, and the net has them at 6, which we'll get into as well.
Yep. I think it's funny to watch the KenPom. So KenPom uses, it's an efficiency margin. So your offensive efficiency, your defensive efficiency, what's the split between those two? And that's your score. And that's what he ranks teams 1 to 365 based on that score. And in the last 24 hours, it's been fascinating to watch because Illinois, Iowa State, and Michigan State are all within 1/100th of a point of each other. So, you know, it's a formula that updates every 10, 15 minutes. So there will be a game on a Sunday between Rutgers and somebody else, and the Rutgers number will affect the strength of schedule of Illinois and move it 0.02 somewhere. So Illinois has been bouncing between 4, 5, and 6. Doesn't matter, obviously, at this time of year, but it's fascinating because these are teams that Illinois is kind of fighting with for seeding spots, fighting with for everything else, and it is that close right now. So it's a fascinating time to look at all these numbers because they have just skyrocketed since December 1st.
And the top 5 teams in the Big Ten, you mentioned a few of them, have a spread of number 2 in KenPom, which is Michigan, to number 12, which is Nebraska. So Michigan 2, Michigan State 4, Illinois 5, Purdue 8, and Nebraska 12. This is as of Monday,
sure,
when we're recording in the middle of the day. It just goes to show you that basically the top of the Big Ten is anybody's ball game,
yep,
at this moment, with Nebraska in the slight half-game lead at 9-0, and then there's 3 other teams that are 8-1, Illinois, Michigan, and Michigan State, and then Purdue's right there at 7-2, and you can't really count out the 6-3 or 5-4. Certainly can't count them out mathematically, but yep, when you look at who are the best teams, it's those 5, and it's going to be fascinating in this race going forward, which we can get into.
Yep.
But I want to first just look back at Saturday and gather our thoughts about Keaton Wagler's 46-point performance on the road in Mackey. Now, your colleague, Tyler Cottingham,
yep,
I don't know how many games he's seen in his life, but he said it's the greatest individual performance he's seen by an Illini player. And I want to say, okay, but are you sure? I mean, even 2 years ago, Terrence Shannon Jr., 40 in a Big Ten tournament. I mean, Io DeSumo had a triple-double? Didn't he have a couple, mm-hmm, of triple-doubles?
2 triple-doubles, yeah.
In within a short span. And I'm not here to say that wasn't. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, are you sure? Because there's been a lot of Brandon Paul, 43 points against Ohio State. Is that the greatest Illinois performance individually? Because recency bias is a thing.
Yeah. I just want to mention that, like, Tyler is saying that, and Tyler was a walk-on on the 1989 Final Four. Like, he was seated courtside to watch all the performances from Kendall Gill and Nick Anderson at Indiana and everything else. For him to say, like, that's the best I've ever seen, that's significant. And, yes, I think the biggest difference is on the road at the number four team in the country. Doing that, maybe somebody did it at home. Look, it tied Andy Kaufman with 46 points, second only to Dave Downey in Illinois history. Dave Downey had 53 at Indiana back in 1963. So it's now tied for the number two performance of all time, at least as far as scoring is concerned.
And not to take anything away from Andy Kaufman, but that was against Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
And it was in double overtime. So he had 50 minutes to score that many points instead of 40. To do it in a game like this on the road, when the team is keying on you because Kylan Boswell is out, and now you're just the entire focus of everything as far as guards are concerned. And to do that, to score 46 on only 17 shots, it's just incredible. There aren't adjectives that anyone can find to put a frame around this thing.
Broke the freshman scoring record for Illinois. When he hit his eighth three-pointer, he broke the freshman three-point record in a game for Illinois and tied the team record. But when he hit his ninth, he set a new team record, and he went 9 of 11 from beyond the arc. He was so efficient in his shots
against the number four team at their place. It's crazy. How do you put words to that? It's against that.
You know, we try to stay on track here, but yep. Suddenly the eye went away for those of you who are watching on our screen.
Uh-huh.
So
I tried turning my screensaver off. What do you think of it?
Is that a picture you've taken?
No, this is one of the when they changed stock? The yes.
That's a stock photo.
I think we leave it for now roll with it. And
I am
going to
guess that's Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, probably. Could be Crater Lake in Oregon. No, okay. That's got to be Tahoe.
Anyway, the eye.
Let's
is
just
still,
keep going with it.
The eye is still lit in our hearts.
Yes. Who knows what pops up next? Could be a family photo. We don't know. This is good stuff. It's a snow day. These are snow day things. We'll fix it at the break.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyway, what were we saying that was more important than the screensaver in our background?
That Keaton Wogler's performance might be the greatest individual performance by an Illini basketball player of all time.
Here's what I love about it. More than just the performance itself, the context of on the road, as you mentioned, against a top 10 team. But this has not been Illinois' MO all year. Mm-hmm. What did we talk about a few episodes? There were 5 starters in double figures, and that's still true with Kylan Boswell, of course, not playing the last few ball games. But this is a balanced scoring attack by Illinois. This was a bit of a one-off where you put it on the shoulders of one guy. But I don't know that it was, here's what we're going to do today, guys. We're just going to, let's see if Keaton can get us 30 or something because we need it.
Yep.
It's what the game gave him.
Yes, yes. And Matt Painter was really good about talking about it afterwards because you heard a lot of Purdue fans were like, well, just stop switching a big man. You know, they would do a ball screen, they'd switch. You know, Braden Smith would be on Keaton. They'd switch. Now it's a big man on Keaton. And then he would do a step back or this and that. And Matt Painter was really good about, like, guys, watch what happened when we didn't. Like, watch the last 4 threes they hit. If we adjust to this, we're giving a big man a wide open 3, and they can hit those. So it's pick your poison with these guys. And so as we saw, you know, at the end of the game, they adjusted a little bit. Well, that was easy. Just it was a Tommy 3, then it was a Jake 3, then it was a Merck 3, and then it was another Tommy 3 and ball game. So, yeah, it was really impressive to see how the other things kept Purdue from being able to, like, okay, well, now we know what to do. We can shut this guy down. Painter was very obvious with, like, look, they're really good in these other areas, and as you see, when we adjust and we do this, then they hit us this way. What are you going to do? Pick your poison. Like
the other,
our thought was like, this guy isn't going to hit 9 of 11 threes, and he did.
The other teams in the Big Ten that have had some really high scoring outputs, look, Illinois just played Maryland, and Coit had gone for 43, I think, the game before playing Illinois. Bruce Thornton can go off for 30-plus with Ohio State. I'm thinking there's a high-volume score up in Minnesota whose name escapes me, but the common thread in all those is there's not a ton of other pieces. No disrespect, but there's not the level of pieces around that those guys right now, and that's why those teams are middle or bottom of the Big Ten. Even though they have one guy, you can kind of key in on that guy, or you can let that guy score and shut everything else down. But there was a pick your poison thing there for Illinois, and it definitely isn't this is the MO going forward. I don't think it's like, okay, here's the recipe now. Keaton Wagler is just going to, like, everyone stand back and let him do his thing. They're still going to be doing what they did at Purdue, but Keaton was on one.
Yep. And I think we really need to mention that even with that, the thing that won the game, sounds crazy to say something else won the game more than someone's 46 points on the road, but the thing that really, if you look at it, like, Purdue almost shot 60%. Like, Purdue would win this game 999 times out of 1,000, except for Illinois grabbed a ton of offensive rebounds and had 18 second-chance points. So even when Wagler wasn't hitting shot after shot after shot, second-chance points were 18-2. Purdue would get one shot, and that's it. And Illinois would get another opportunity and another opportunity. That one possession where missed three, rebound, made three. That's how this offense works. It's why it's so efficient, because even when the shot doesn't fall, with so many offensive rebounds, they even have more chances.
Yeah, but you said 999 out of 1,000, but for the offensive rebounds. But that's not the oblong football bounced our way in a recovery. It's what you said later. It's by design.
Yes.
Those are not accidental offense. I mean, sometimes, right? I mean, you're playing, but you're playing percentages with your positioning. And by the fact, there's a couple of them, like, well, they got that offensive rebound because Tomislav Ivicic is 7'1".
Yep. If someone were to ask me what's the biggest secret to Illinois right now, like, what are other teams trying to figure out, I would say it's rebounding three-pointers. You know, from Ben Hummerkaus to Jake Davis to others, slashing in and knowing where it's going to bounce to on a missed three, they just get so many opportunities off of those missed threes. And that's kind of been the secret sauce so far of, you know, it's like those old Izzo teams that would get a ton of offensive rebounds. Now it's because they had hefty guys clearing out lanes, and those were the barroom brawl days of, you know, Big Ten basketball, let's say 20, 25 years ago. And that was the secret of, they would out-muscle you in the lane and get all the rebounds and do this. This is a shoot a lot of threes and get really, really good at rebounding threes, and you're going to win a lot of basketball games because you up your possessions over and over and over. So it's a very, very impressive thing and hard to stop.
The other thing I loved about this game is, in Lord of the Rings parlance, one doesn't simply walk into Mackey.
I was going to give you credit for that, because you walked by me on press row immediately after the game and you said that. And it's the perfect – one does not simply walk into Mackey. It's perfect.
First time winning there since what was it, the 2021 season?
I think it was the 2020 season, before COVID shut things down. Illinois beat Purdue at home to start that seven-game winning streak that got them into the rankings for the first time. And then they played at Purdue after winning five in a row and won that one as well. And that's the last time.
Before that, they hadn't won since 2008 in Mackey.
Yeah.
And of course, those are all the years when you played every year, right?
Yep.
You played them every year. Just the dominance of Purdue at home, and that building is so hard to play in.
Yeah, there was that great clip where someone was asking BYU's AJ Devansta about his performance and how he'd scored 40, and they said, I don't know if you know this, but you were part of a historic day for freshmen, the Houston freshman Flemings, he scored. And they told him that, you know, Keaton Wagler scored 46 at Purdue, and he paused, the interviewer's like, at Purdue? So, like, it's these great, like, everybody knows it's hard to win there. It's very hard to score 20 there. He scored 46 there. It had those fans around the entire arena shaking their heads.
Part of a day that is actually pretty historic here. Keaton Wogler at Illinois, 46 at Purdue, and then Kingston Flemings at Purdue. Kingston Flemings dropped 42 at Texas Tech. It might be the first time ever that three freshmen have dropped 40 plus on the same day. Did you know about either of those before this game was played?
Yeah, we're actually watching Tech versus Houston. So I seen Kingston live when he hit that 42 mark. And I was like, yeah, these freshmen going crazy. I feel like we have a crazy class. I think we have one of the best classes in recent.
The other thing I was reminded of is Illinois went to Mackey. And, well, I think it was 21-22 season. And Jaden Ivey went off. Was the Purdue guard, future NBA player. Mm-hmm. And he kind of took over the game for Purdue. Illinois couldn't stop him. I want to say he had 25-ish points. Your memory would be better on that.
I don't remember the exact. I remember the game. I don't remember the total.
Okay.
Yep.
But after the game, Brad Underwood said, yeah, that's what they look like. Mm-hmm. Referring to pros, future pros, going to be in the NBA, could be a lottery pick kind of thing. I wonder if Matt Painter was going, that's what they look like, guys.
Yep.
Not that Purdue doesn't have outstanding players. Trey Kaufman, Wren, Braden Smith. All-American type players. But oh my gosh.
Yep.
Keaton Wogler, I mean, the story is making its way around if you don't know it already. Severely under-recruited, didn't play on a high-profile shoe circuit in his AAU days, but won big at his high school in Kansas City area, Shawnee, but had other good players around him there. And it was Tyler Underwood who spotted him in his tape and Brad Underwood was impressed with his passing and said, well, that leads to a good IQ, but he was still a little bit scrawny. Goes on the Fletch program. Again, one doesn't just simply walk into Mackey. One doesn't simply walk into Mackey at 18 years old and appear to be unfazed. And that's what this guy has yet to blink. Yep. Frankly, the team has yet to blink. I know they laid an egg against UConn. UConn's really good at Madison Square Garden. But they've changed things up since then. They've put Wogler as a point guard. I was a little okay, to be honest. Illinois won all their road games so far. But where have those road games been?
Right.
The hardest one was Iowa. That got loud and that game got tight. But they rose to the occasion there. But like, okay, this is Mackey. Yep. And you're missing your senior leader in Kylan Boswell.
Yep.
The other thing, I think we talked about it, this was a comeback game.
Yeah.
Albeit in the first half, but Illinois finally had the let's come back down 11. It's their biggest deficit this year to come back and win. The previous was 7 points against Texas Tech, and that was at home. Mm-hmm. Now, it's different than you're down 11 with 4 minutes to go.
Sure.
You've got time, but I just saw a mental side of Illinois that took another step. And I think it could do a lot for them going forward. And 9 in a row, the most in the Brad Underwood era, the most since, was it the 12-13 season?
Yeah, I think that's right.
When they had that big winning streak to start it in John Gross's first year.
Yep.
Incredible. And then there's going to be a lot of most since the 04-05 season when you look at things overall.
Yep. It is... It certainly changes the outlook. It certainly is a pivot point of the thoughts are centered around, ooh, with Boswell out, gosh, that feels like it's going to fall to a 4-5 seed. And the 4-5 seed has always been, you know, the Achilles of Illinois so many years in that 4-5 game of it went poorly against Washington or it went well against Cincinnati and all those years and that. This now switches the discussion to, okay, certainly a 3 seed, probably a 2 seed, and is the 1 seed on the table if you beat Michigan at home or win at Nebraska and at Michigan State? So we can get all into all of that in our second segment here, but this is a shifting game. It shifts the narrative of what this team can be it shifts. Okay, well, what happens when Boswell comes back? What happens if Ty Rogers is healthy and he adds a few minutes a game of rebounding and defense and this and that? Like, this changes the perspective of what this team can be and where it can go.
Let's talk about that in a moment. You've got Light the Eye presented by the U of I Credit Union.
And let's get that eye back on the screen. What do you say?
You're in charge of technology.
All right, I'll get it right.
So with Illinois' win at Purdue on Saturday, the Illini are now 17-3 overall. They've won 9 straight. KenPom has them at number 5, and the net ranking is at number 6, which is also, I looked at Joe Lunardi's, and there's more than one bracketologist out there, but Joe Lunardi's usually pretty on point, and most fans are familiar, but it's important to say that any bracketologist who is projecting seeds is saying this is what we predict the committee will place these teams if the season was to end right now.
Yes.
What it is not is what we what I think should be.
Yep.
In an opinion, say it's more. This is what I forecast the seed will be based on what the committee will do, not what an individual thinks Illinois should do. Now, there's some people that put out that this is how I would seed them, but what I'm referring to is how people who are as expert as they can be on it think the committee will do come Selection Sunday, which there's a lot of basketball games.
Sure.
Remember, Thursday night against Washington. By the way, thank you, Keaton Wagler.
Yes.
Speaking of that, Thursday is my birthday.
Oh, excellent.
And I'll be 46. So I feel like Keaton Wagler got me a gift a few days early with 46 points in a game.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's very kind of him.
Yeah, very nice of him.
Most kids these days wouldn't even send you a text.
Mm-hmm. Were you thinking that when that last free throw took him to 46?
No, it only came to me yesterday.
Got it.
Probably a good thing. Otherwise, I would have like put it on social media and people like, don't.
Yes.
Stop that.
The moment is not about you.
No, it's not. Which is why I'm doing that right now, to make this about me.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, Joe Lunardi has Illinois as a 2 seed and the 6th overall in the country right now. A long way to go.
Yes. It's hard to, you know, some of these, when those bracketologists are projecting, let's just use Michigan, for example. Michigan has those non-conference wins in that tournament over, like, Gonzaga and San Diego State. I can't remember who the other one was. They were blowing out good teams, and they shot to the top of everyone's chart. Since then, they haven't had opportunities yet. They will. They have road trips coming up, and I think they go to Michigan State soon, and they have a lot of games coming up where they will be tested. But if you look at Michigan's current resume, you know, Monday mornings I put out the net team sheet, the sheet that the committee looks at to say, oh, okay, let's compare this one next to this one, and they have this and they have that. They split games into quad 1, quad 2, quad 3, quad 4, just to see if, are you a team like St. Louis Billikens, only have one loss, but they've only played 2 quad 1 games, and they're really on the low end of quad 1. They just, you know, most good teams would be 17-1 against that schedule. You compare that to somebody who's played an incredibly difficult schedule like Florida, and how do you balance that? When you look at Michigan's right now, they only have one what's called a quad 1A game, which is quad 1 brackets the games into if you beat a team at home that is in the top 30 of the net, you beat a team on a neutral site that's in the top 50, or you beat a team on the road that's in the top 75, that's called a quad 1 game. And then on those sheets that they give the committee, they split it in quad 1A and quad 1B just to be able to visually, graphically see, oh, wow, they beat a lot of teams at the top of quad 1. That's very impressive.
Wouldn't that just be an eighth?
Yes.
Half of quad 1 would just be the top eighth?
Yes, the word quad in there, yes, is a bit deceiving. It's excellent math there. Your math is mathing very well. But if you look,
they're an eighth one team.
Yes. So quad 1A and quad 1B, Michigan only has one quad 1A game so far. Not their fault. They're going to have a lot coming up. They've beaten some good teams, but most of them are in quad 1B. And Illinois has seven of those games so far and is 4-3. So in that sense, right now.
Yeah. Oh, so overall, Illinois is 6-3 in quad ones.
Yes, but 4-3 in quad 1A,
yeah,
and then 2-0 in quad 1B.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois has played seven of those top end of quad 1 games so far just because of how the schedule was laid out. And Nebraska, I think, has played three. Michigan State has played four. Michigan has played one. Illinois has played seven. So that says Illinois has played the tougher end of their schedule. Michigan will have opportunities later, and those bracketologists are assuming that Michigan, at the level they play at, is going to win those games. But the whole my whole point here is that Illinois has four quad 1A wins so far. We don't know how those teams will do. Purdue could go on a nine-game losing streak or something, and then suddenly it's a quad 2 win, and later on we're like, oh, that wasn't as good of a shot. But at the moment, it's a really good resume. It's hard to put Illinois any lower than what you said Lunardi did at the sixth best team, which would be the second 2 seed.
Okay, let's say they stay there as a 2 seed.
Yes.
Come Selection Sunday. By the way, what did you mean when you said Illinois has gotten the hard part of their schedule done? Because they the rest of the way, Illinois has quad 1 or 2 games except for the final 2 as things stand right now. Like you said, your net changes to the quad, but the final 2 games of the year, home against Oregon, and then the finale on the road against Maryland, those are quad 3 games. But everything else is 1 and 2.
Yep.
You're going to go to Nebraska. Yep. You're going to go to Michigan State in the coming weeks. And then, of course, the game against Michigan at home. Those are the three biggest games remaining. So
yes.
I don't know exactly what you meant by the schedule. The hard part's done.
If we then add those three games to the 10 that will likely be quad 1A games, Illinois played 7 of the 10 so far. Michigan will probably end up with 8, and they've played 1 of those 8 so far. Or maybe they only end up with 6 or something like that.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to make sure you weren't saying, well, the whole hard part is
yes.
over.
No. Illinois' season will be defined by the three games you mentioned. At Nebraska on Sunday, at Michigan State the following Saturday, and then at Michigan coming to Champaign on February 27th. My point with that is that the Illinois resume is really, really strong at the moment. It's hard to look at everybody else's resume. You'll see some brackets out there that still have Illinois as a 3 seed, even some has a 4 seed. If you really dig in on the numbers because of those four quad 1A wins, which I think is only like it's like third nationally, it's either a 2 or a 1 seed right now. Now, you could lose a game at UCLA or at USC on that road trip, and everything changes on the picture. But I'm saying right now, it's definitely a 2 seed. And in the picture for win those games and you're a 1 seed kind of a resume.
All right. But let's just say they stay a 2 seed.
Okay.
What does that mean to you, Robert?
Well, thank you for setting that up, Scott. I will now talk for 43 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Here's what I wanted to talk about today. This is the main thing I wanted to cover. It's that there is, I think, some confusion out there on how the seeding works for the first and second round and then the third round. I've been kind of focused on this all year because of the potential path and how it looks like 2005. If people remember in 2005, the first two rounds were in Indianapolis. The Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games were in Chicago at Rosemont. People might remember that Elite Eight game. And then the Final Four was in St. Louis. So Illinois bussed to every NCAA tournament game, over to Indy, up to Chicago, down to St. Louis.
I think they came home in between, but
yes,
your point stands.
Yes. There is a potential this year to do it in reverse. And I've been writing about this for 5 years since these 2026 seedings came out. First
because
and second
round. Because you
have
time to do these kinds of things.
It's all I think about all day, as does Lauren Tate, as he mentioned on our last episode. But as it sets up this year, there's the potential, not a guarantee, but the potential to go St. Louis for the first two rounds, Chicago for the Sweet 16, and then the Final Four is in Indianapolis. It could be reverse of that that thing. Now, how does that happen? I think there's some confusion, and I've had, when I've been tweeting about this, and I've been saying this since November because I'm kind of obsessed with this becoming a thing.
It's unusual of you to get so laser focused on something like that.
I don't understand. I don't understand. My wife, if she ever watches these, when hearing that part would be like, thank you for someone else understanding. So I just want to go through how it works, like how it would happen that the committee would lay out these seeds and who gets sent where. So what the committee does is they start with the what's called protected seeds. And the protected seeds are the top four teams in each region, 1 through 16. They call them protected because they try to get those teams the benefit of, hey, you played really well. You got a top four seed in your region. In the first two rounds, we're going to get you as close to campus as possible. They try to do that for other teams. They try not to send Morehead State from Kentucky out to Portland if they can avoid it. But if they can't avoid it, it's just they say, okay, 1 through 16, those are the only ones where we're really going to make the attempt to get you close to campus so your fans can come to those games. So Illinois getting one of those 16 protected seeds has been a goal every year. It's be a 1 seed, 2 seed, 3 seed, or 4 seed, and hopefully a higher on that level because then you get a better opportunity. So I'm just going to walk people through how that would work because I feel like people still kind of don't understand how they do those seedings. So say you have, I made myself a list here of teams 1 to 16. It's just what I believe the committee would say from 1 to 16 today, if the seeding were today. It's going to change, but we'll just use this for today. And then there's 8 locations for the first two rounds. The first two rounds will be played in Philly, Buffalo, Greenville, South Carolina, Tampa, St. Louis, Oklahoma City, Portland, or San Diego. Those are the 8 locations. You might remember that the committee made a change years ago to where there weren't it used to be like, say, St. Louis and Oklahoma City were the two locations for the Midwest. And so all the teams in the Midwest bracket would go to those two locations for the first two rounds and then go to Chicago. They made the switch to make it easier for these protected seeds that now they say, look, it doesn't matter if we put 3 games in Portland between 4 teams that are part of the East bracket, but they're playing their first rounds in Portland, Oregon, because they're trying to get teams close to campus. And then for the regional, for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, they take you to that city. So here's how it would work if these seedings were happening right now. Okay, so Arizona is pretty clearly the number one team. They are almost certainly sent to San Diego, right? That's going to be the closest thing. So now one of the two spots in San Diego is taken. If UConn is the number two team, send UConn directly to Philadelphia. That's a done deal. UConn, if they're a 1 seed, they're getting Philadelphia. Duke is next. Okay, Duke's got to go to Greenville, South Carolina. Close enough drive. Maybe Philly, we'll see, but they go to Greenville, South Carolina. Michigan's next. Okay, what's closest to Michigan? Buffalo is closest to Michigan's campus. Michigan will get sent to Buffalo. Then there's Nebraska. Okay, Nebraska's about equidistant from St. Louis and Oklahoma City. They're going to look at the whole bracket and say, look, it's the same drive for those Nebraska fans. We're going to send them to Oklahoma City because St. Louis has a lot of teams vying for that spot. Then you get to Illinois is the number 6 team on my list here, straight to St. Louis. The first team to get an opportunity to go to St. Louis. 7 is Houston. Okay, Houston, you're going to Oklahoma City. Doesn't matter what bracket Houston's in or if Houston is in the same bracket as Nebraska, who is there. It's just Nebraska and the 3 teams in their little pod, and Houston and the 3 teams in their little pod would go to Oklahoma City. Now, Oklahoma City is shut down. No other teams are going to go there. If that was the closest for BYU, who we'll get to later, if that was the closest for Texas Tech, tough luck. Sorry, that site is now closed. I have Iowa State 8 on my list, and they go to St. Louis, and now St. Louis is shut down. Okay, so now you get to see how this is happening for protected seeds. I have Purdue number 9 on my list. Purdue had their eyes on St. Louis, closest to their campus, closest to the Illinois campus as well, but St. Louis just got Illinois and then Iowa State, and there's no more spots. So now the committee's got to say, okay, Are we sending Purdue to Buffalo? Are we sending them to Philly? Where are they going? You know, then Michigan State's next on that list. Well, okay. Well, maybe we'll send Purdue down to Greenville, or maybe we'll send them over to, let's put Purdue in Philly, because then number 10 is Michigan State. We'll send them with Michigan over to Buffalo. 11 is Gonzaga. They can go to Portland, but 12 is Vandy. Okay, Vandy's going to go to Greenville instead of St. Louis. This is how the process works. BYU is next. Once he gets to Texas Tech, Texas Tech would obviously want to go to Oklahoma City, but those two spots already went to Nebraska and Houston.
To make your head further spin, though, there's also, when you get down to it, they try to keep same conference teams as far apart from each other until the last possible game.
And they try to snake these as best they can so that the one seed, the number one overall seed, plays the last. So if Arizona is one, eight is Iowa State. So they try to do their best to pair Arizona with Iowa State, to pair UConn with Houston, so that it's like the best one seed isn't playing the best two seed. Now, that doesn't matter until the Sweet 16, and I'll get to that in a second. But that's how these processes work for getting those sites. So to get to St. Louis, and this is what I've been writing about and tweeting about all season, it's really, in my estimation, this fight between Purdue, Illinois, and Iowa State, whoever is number three on the list of those three teams on the seeding list is getting sent somewhere else, can't go to St. Louis. So it's going to be this season-long thing. That's why this game was massive for that, because it jumps Illinois above Purdue to get games close to campus and to get 15,000 Illini fans would show up for a first and second round in St. Louis versus if they get sent to Philly, it's going to be 3,000, something like that. So it's a big deal. So that is the first and second round. That's how that works. It doesn't matter what region. It doesn't matter any of that other stuff. That's how the first and second rounds are laid out and the way that the committee will do this. So the job for Illinois, now that Illinois is six on these lists and most likely on everybody's list ahead of Iowa State and ahead of Purdue, is to stay ahead of them if they want to go to St. Louis.
To zoom out, the difference between 04-05,
yep,
certainly, and the difference between this current team and 2 years ago in the Elite Eight run, is this, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, because everybody looked at Illinois' roster and said, talented, but you're putting together a lot of new pieces.
Yep.
Again, I feel like I should always say the caveat is, you're 9 out of 20 games complete, right?
Yep.
Yep, 9 out of 20 games complete in the Big Ten schedule. More than halfway done with the whole season, the regular season, but you're not yet done with half your Big Ten schedule. That being said, you can look at this team and go, coming into the season, well, based on history and the talent that's there and the returning pieces and just what we know, Sweet 16 seems a reasonable expectation sort of floor. We all know the tournament's weird. Yep. Things can happen. But just when you say, can this team be one of the 16 left in March? Oh, probably. I would have put that in my head. Like, is this a reasonable target?
Yep.
Even though going with everything new, maybe this is a team that's fighting for 500 in the Big Ten.
Yep.
Well, we knew they had the talent, though, to do even better than that, but you had to see it play out. And it is.
Yes. Yes.
And it is. I also want to note that, you know, is bunched up in the net and KenPom is the top five teams are in the Big Ten. There is, what do we got here? 1, 2, 3 teams that are sub 100 in KenPom. Oregon is at 91 and Minnesota is at 84. So the bottom five teams in the Big Ten are not good.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, like,
all that to say, I'm just saying, like, 9 wins in a row is 9 wins in a row. I'm just wanting to make sure that the gap between top and bottom in the Big Ten is pretty wide this year.
And there's the gap between the top tier and the second tier. Like, if you look at some of these lists, you'll see Illinois, Nebraska, Michigan, Michigan State, and Purdue all listed as 1 seed, 2 seed, or 3 seed. And then you'll see, like, Iowa and Ohio State listed as 9 seeds on some brackets. There's a huge gap. Iowa's
a decent team.
Yes, yes.
And so is UCLA and Wisconsin. I mean, right. They're all going to be fine.
But so you've Iowa's got this next bunch at the top. You've got your, like you just mentioned, UCLA, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio State. All those teams like should be in the tournament, but better not lose some games they shouldn't and this and that. And then you have some truly awful teams like Maryland and like Rutgers that, you know, are probably looking at 2-18 as their conference record or something like that. So, yeah, 3 Big Tens this year. I do want to mention, since I said I'll get to it in a second, I do want to mention the way that that seeding is different for the Sweet 16. So everybody has their eyes on Chicago, right? The really the only way to assure Chicago is to be at least the number 3 overall team, because otherwise you're getting thrown into the mixer there. So, you know, say Illinois does end up a 1 seed. Say they do win at Nebraska or at Michigan State and or beat, you know, whatever. Say they finish 17-3 in the Big Ten and you know, they end up as a 1 seed. They need to be the 3rd 1 seed. They at least need to be ahead of Michigan there, because they seed those regionals the same way as, okay, we will give Arizona the West and we will give UConn the East and we will give, you know, say Illinois is next. Well, we'll give Illinois the Midwest and that sends Duke to the South and that type of thing. So, you know, if Illinois wants to get Chicago and assure that they will be in Chicago, it's not so much this protected seed process as it is the only real ones that get guaranteed those spots are those. So, like, say it was Arizona, UConn, Michigan, Illinois were the 4-1 seeds, just to say that's the response. Well, Michigan would then get Midwest if they were 3, and Illinois gets sent to the South, wherever that Sweet 16 is. Just, you're still a 1 seed, but you got to be higher on the 1 seed list if you want to pick your spot. Michigan gets to be closer to campus, and Illinois gets sent South. So, that's a totally different – that's kind of more of a crapshoot to get Chicago, because then, say, Illinois is a 2 seed, you're just – it's then the pairings of who they're trying to pair in each bracket. And if they want to pair Illinois opposite of Duke as the number 3 overall team and the number 6 overall team, then Illinois is going wherever Duke is placed into the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8 location. So St. Louis – my whole point here is St. Louis is very possible – Illinois is ahead of Illinois, or Purdue and Ohio State or Iowa State right now. Very possible to get that seeding. To get Chicago, which everybody would love for the Sweet 16, the only way to guarantee is to be at least the number 3 overall 1 seed or be ahead of anybody else in the Midwest that could possibly snatch up that spot.
Would there be anything more, Robert, if that all happened?
I would charter buses. Like if we had the reverse 2005 path, I don't know what I would do with myself. Like, this would be, you know, look, these seedings came out 3, 4, 5 years ago, and I pointed it out back then of like, everybody, I don't know what our team will be like in 2026, but look at this. There's a possible path of St. Louis, then Chicago, then Indy. So
you said from our last episode that Lauren Tate thinks about these things. What you meant was, is Lauren Tate thinks about Illini stuff and sports a lot all mm-hmm. the time. And he is not looking at the projected path 5 years from now.
Well, I mean, like,
and that's not because he's 94. I'm just saying there's a distinction there. There's a 1A and a 1B.
I cannot help it if I filter every single thing through the fan experience, and the fan experience here could be 2005, like, if the season goes top end. Again, a lot of games left to play. This could be all moot by the end, and Illinois ends up as a 3 seed and gets sent to Oklahoma City or whatever. All that could change. But as it stands right now with this win, everything is in front of Illinois to control the destiny.
Okay. A couple of other items we want to mention. Super Bowl is coming up, and there will be 3 former Illini on the roster
yep.
for the 2 teams. One will be a regular player, of course, Devin Witherspoon with the Seahawks. will represent there for the NFC. And then the New England Patriots both have Verdarian Lowe. Is he a regular player?
Rotational. Yeah, he's not a starter.
Rotational lineman. And Tommy DeVito is on the roster, too. So.
Yep.
So pretty doubtful that Tommy DeVito will be playing in the Super Bowl. That means things have probably not gone well for New England.
But in my mind, obviously, two New England quarterbacks get injured. Tommy comes in. And the final play of the game is Tommy versus Spoon on a goal line pass. That's just the way my brain works. That's the way I picture things happening in all of time.
What happened to Robert's head? Well, it just exploded.
It just exploded.
You're just walking around with a neck.
Yes. 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 Actually, I don't really have a neck, so
you're just walking around with shoulders.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Illinois women lost on the road to Nebraska on Sunday, 81-75. For a good portion of the game, it was not that close. They continue to be without Gretchen Dolan, who at last check was still day-to-day. The Illini are now 5-4 in Big Ten play. They are home against the number three team in the country. Well, that was the number three team before the new rankings come out, UCLA. UCLA has won 13 in a row. Wow. With Lauren Betts, of course, one of the stars of the game, 16 points per game and 8 rebounds. So the Illini in a tough stretch with the ranked teams all over. Then they're going to the Northwest at Washington and at Oregon. Washington is number 25 in the last rankings. Mm-hmm. So that will not be easy on the road. But there is going to be more wins there for the Illini in the Big Ten. And hopefully they get Gretchen Dolan back as soon as possible. Illinois track, go check out. They are setting all kinds of new program records. We call that the Light the Eye bump after Petros Kipriano was on our program a couple of weeks ago. Oh, wait, I'm being told he was also on other programs.
Okay.
Sorry, I guess it had nothing to do with us. Uh-huh. It might be more on the talent.
You have a producer in your ear? That's weird. You don't get me the producer in your ear.
I have a judge and jury in there, too. It's kind of weird. And Illinois wrestling got a ranked win too in their meets, and won't be long before yours truly is on the road with Illinois baseball. They get going in a few weeks. Just had the hot stove banquet on mm-hmm. Saturday night, so that was a good day for me. Went to Purdue, engineered the game there, did the pregame show, and then scurried back through the snow to the hot stove banquet. And that's always like the meet the team kind of event. There's a lot of community folks that are there. This year's keynote speaker was Fergie Jenkins. So I had a good Saturday.
Excellent. How? Where's your first trip? Are they going to the like Coastal Carolina thing again?
That's the second weekend. We're going to Tampa to play South Florida.
Interesting.
The Bulls, a three-game series. Okay. So that's whatever Valentine's weekend is.
Really?
Yeah.
That close.
I can't think of the... Yeah, I think the 15th is this...
So we're like 20 days from the baseball. Oh, yeah. Less than.
Yeah. Yeah, and softball starts the weekend before. Softball's the first weekend of February, and baseball's the second weekend.
I know golf has their alumni match down in Florida that they do at the end of every January. So, yeah. Gosh, spring sports getting rolling.
Going to be weird. There's going to be a lot going on.
Yep.
All right. Next time we hope to, next time you'll be on location.
I'll be in Idaho.
Yeah. So we'll have some sort of hookup set for a new edition of Light the Eye.
I'll just warn you here. So what's going on out there is that my son and my daughter-in-law have like a trip. He has like a work trip to a conference in Scottsdale. So they're going to go find the warmth, and my wife and I are watching the grandkids. So this is going to be straight up like watch the kids, mom and dad aren't there kind of a thing. So I am looking forward to this. Now, when we're recording, there might be a little three-year-old girl wandering in asking questions. I might have to put her on the pod, but we'll see. But yes, I'm going to, for those who know my story, when my wife and I got married, our boys were 9, 11, and 13. Go up there. I could sense.
We're just like an hour into the podcast. Let's launch into another story.
Yes. So I missed the diaper phase. I missed everything else. So as a grandparent now, my son has a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. As a grandparent now, this is going to be parenting 101 for me. I've never done these days. This will be the first time we've had the kids for like 4 days with no one else around. So I will have stories. Like, I missed the diaper phase before. I'm about to come back with stories.
Stay tuned next time when we talk diapers.
Stay tuned when a 53-year-old guy changes his first ever diaper.
Thanks so much for being along. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, the U of I Credit Union. We will talk diapers and the Illini next time when we light the eye.
We should probably unlight. Stayed on this time.